I kissed her and she kissed me. Like the fella once said, ain't that a kick in the head? The room was completely black. I hugged her and she hugged back. Like the sailor said, folk, ain't that a hole in the boat? My head keeps spinning. I go to sleep and keep grinning. If this is just the beginning, my life is gonna be beautiful. I've sunshine enough to spread.
Hey, a little bit of Dean Martin there for you, right? Remember that song? Way back. Good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am indeed Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you very much for joining us on this Wednesday, August the 24th. Moving right along in the month, are we not? In a few minutes, Jonathan Emord, I hope I'm pronouncing that last name correctly, a constitutional lawyer and an author, is going to join us. We are going to talk about how the Biden administration, on its march towards socialism, is treating its citizens like they are the enemy. He's going to explain, so stay tuned for that, just a few minutes. And it was primary day yesterday across the country. And here in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis and former President Trump came up big winners. We are going to take a look, so stay tuned for that. And also, President Biden getting ready to sign what amounts to about a $1 trillion, it's actually a $900 billion college loan bailout. Wow. Everything about this thing is wrong. We are going to take a look at this thing as well. He's pledging to reduce inflation, and he's causing it with this bill. We will talk about it. And in our ultimate top 10, if you listen to our show on Monday, we gave you the top 10 states with the best community colleges in the country. We are going to give you the top 10 with the worst community colleges towards the end of the show today. So lots to talk about. Don't forget to listen, by the way, to Senior Voice America. It's on Monday through Friday. It precedes our program here on the Tantalk Radio Network, 8 to 10 a.m. Tim Bryce and Company, Senior Voice America. Well, so Joe Biden today is expected to announce his much-anticipated loan forgiveness program. And Americans will be footing a nearly $300 billion deal with this announcement. This would be a $10,000 per student loan forgiveness if you qualify. This is going to be a complete mess. According to the Penn Wharton budget model, a one-time maximum debt forgiveness of $10,000 per borrower who make less than $125,000 is going to run around $300 billion for taxpayers. We've seen it more than that in the long haul. The cost increases to around $330 billion if the program is continued over the standard 10-year window. Now, the precise details of the plan, nobody knows about. Of course they don't. But, you know, it's upsetting all kinds of people, especially those that have paid back their loans or are not going to college. Correct? How are you going to feel? How about you guys and people and women that have mortgages? Or maybe you have a car loan. You're not going to be forgiven either one of those, are you? Borrow money? No. And of course, when you do this, you know what happens to the cost of college itself? It goes up. It goes up. Americans are experiencing sticker shock right now, not only in the grocery store or in the car shop or the car dealership where there is sky-high inflation, but the cost of attending college has ballooned by multiple times the rate of inflation over the past five decades, according to an analysis by, I guess it's called My E-Learning World. It shows would-be students are increasingly opting out of school or choosing alternatives. This organization found that the average cost of going to a private college, including tuition, fees, books, and room and board, went from $2,930 a year in 1971 to $51,690 per year in 2021. That is an increase of about five times the rate of inflation over the past 50 years. So college is getting out of hand anyway. And I'll tell you, it's because of the direct involvement of the federal government, just like when it gets its tentacles into any private industry. It raises the cost and typically reduces the quality. And college is a perfect example of this. The price tag for public college has gone from $1,410 per year in the early 1970s. Now, these are schools, by the way, public colleges, where the state chips in, right, to help fund the student. So it's gone from $1,410 a year in the 70s to $23,000 per student for in-state and almost $40,000 per student coming from out-of-state. So there you go. Why has the cost of college far outpaced inflation? Studies suggest institutions of higher learning are able to hike cost further due to the federal government's increasing generosity in handing out the loans. This is exactly what happens. This is going to increase the cost of college even more if this Joe Biden student loan forgiveness program goes into effect. So now we're going to not be able to afford college even more, or even less, or whatever the word is. We just won't be able to afford college as well. And yet we continue on our merry way, going down the road, allowing the federal government to become involved in things. In fact, our next guest, our guest right after the break, is going to talk a little bit. He's a constitutional law attorney and an author, about how the involvement of the federal government with their idea of marching towards socialism is treating us like we're bumpkins. So let us, I'll tell you what, Ed, let's take our break. When we come back, Jonathan Emord is going to join us. We'll talk a little bit about how we're being treated and how we are the enemy.
Like they're not shining. Her hair falls perfectly without her trying. She's so beautiful.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Listen to the latest pet trends with benefits on the Pet Buzz every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Join pet trendologist Charlotte Reed and veterinarian Dr. Michael Fleck as they talk all things pets. From animal health and wellness, money-saving tips, celebrity gossip, breaking news, and more. Their expert guests are in the know and in the now. To learn more about this unique program and its hosts, tune into the show on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Esta noche bailamos. Te doy toda mi vida. Quédate conmigo.
We are back. Thank you so very much for being with us on a Wednesday here at Freedom Works. Delighted to have Jonathan Emord join us. He is a constitutional law attorney. He's also an author. And he has a book, The Authoritarians, Their Assault on Individual Liberty, the Constitution, and Free Enterprise, from the 19th century to the present. Jonathan, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thank you, Paul.
Yeah, it's our pleasure to have you. You talk in this piece that you have written. In fact, you wrote a couple of things, one for Town Hall and one for the American Greatness website. But basically, you're talking about how we are on a path towards socialism without a mandate towards it. Biden and the far-left leadership of the Democratic Party are leading us on to this through actions that repeatedly attack the lives, liberties, and properties of the American people. So you're basically saying that they've got a plan to lead us down the path towards socialism?
Without question. Actually, in February of 2020, Schumer and Pelosi, the leadership of the Democratic Party, indicated plainly by stating that they would endorse fully a socialist candidate for president, that was Bernie Sanders, if that was the choice of their party. And that came at the same time of the Gallup poll showing 76% of Democrats said they would be perfectly comfortable if the United States adopted socialism. But the proof is really in the pudding, because we have Joe Biden coming into office pledging himself to be a socialist to the party leadership, meeting with Bernie Sanders and committing to that, meeting even with AOC and committing to that, and then enacting all of these measures which have destroyed the United States. You have a president, for the first time in American history, not articulating a vision of how to get a more prosperous and strong America, but instead attacking all parts of our society in a way that tears it down. Anything that is beneficial is torn down. So we have open borders, allowing a southern border, allowing criminals to come into this country, terrorists to come into this country, gangs, and drug trafficking, so much so that fentanyl overdose is now the leading cause of death for everyone 18 to 45 years old in America. You have sanctuary cities that are endorsed by the administration popping up all over in the urban areas. You have no sincere law enforcement. We have defund the police movements. We don't incarcerate criminals. We let them go. So, well, what they're doing is removing law enforcement so there is no safety or security in your rights, your right to life, your right to liberty, your right to property. Opening the southern borders so that destruction takes place, wanton destruction, and rather than do anything to restrict it, they do nothing but give incentives for more illegal immigration.
Do you think that they're really on a path towards trying to take apart the United States? I'm talking about the Democratic Party, because I think you're right about what you're saying. I think you're right on target. But I'm wondering about what their motives are. You know, Biden went against Trump saying he was going to be a moderate, in the Democratic primary. He was the moderate. You know, in a field of far lefties when he ran for president in the Democratic primary. And then he ends up becoming a puppet for the far left. So anyway, I just wanted to get your thought. Do you think the Democrats are really trying to take apart this country?
I mean, really, these people are not stupid. They know the consequences of their actions. They know that rampant inflation will destroy the economy. They know that breaking the backbone of the American economy, destroying fossil fuel industry, will cause rampant gas inflation, will ruin our ability to maintain a modern industrial economy. They are intent on this. I mean, it's not a secret. It's overt. When Schumer talks about transformational change, everybody in the bureaucracy understands that to mean the move to socialism. What is the massive transformational change that they're talking about? What is the transformational change that Biden was referring to when he was speaking with the Japanese prime minister? It's all the same. That's what they're saying. You got to go through this pain of destroying the fossil fuel industry. When you say you're going to destroy the fossil fuel industry, you are saying you are going to destroy a capitalist economy in America, because you're going to create supply shortages that are going to cause gas prices to rise, and you know that, and you know that is going to cripple and supply chains, is going to cause inflation in the market, all through the market. When you pay out $1.9 trillion for the American Rescue Plan, $1.2 trillion more dollars for the Infrastructure and Jobs Act, $700 billion more dollars for the falsely named Inflation Reduction Act, and now another $300 billion for canceling $10,000 of student debt. This is right in the middle of a massive inflation run. This is designed to destroy the economy. No one who's serious, who has a brain in their head, could understand this to be anything other than an attack on us.
We're talking with Jonathan Emord. He is a constitutional law attorney, and he has authored a book called The Authoritarians, Their Assault on Individual Liberty, the Constitution, and Free Enterprise from the 19th Century to the Present. Jonathan, I mean, I tend to agree with you, but I can never figure out if they really, I mean, are they looking for some sort of one world order, run by, the whole world comes under the thumb of a handful of people? I mean, if they're that bright, why are they going down this road when anybody with any common sense would tell you it's the road to ruin? I mean, what is really behind why they are doing this?
What's really behind this is a lust for power, for self-aggrandizement, and riches beyond our wildest imagining. That's what leads these dictators and authoritarians to push for total control, for a transfer of sovereignty from the individual to the state. These people think they're going to be running the show. They don't think there's going to be a bloodbath where one of them kills the others, as has been the case in every communist revolution. They think it's going to be different. They think their cadre, their group of democratic leaders, are going to end up leading a socialist country in which all of us are enslaved and do their bidding. And the movement to indoctrinate our youth with CRT, which is Marxism in the schoolroom, through race, and to take children and make them hate their parents and destroy the nuclear family by convincing them that their genders are fluid, that they can be whatever they want to be without regard to their natural gender. This whole movement is designed to cripple the next generation, to make them unwilling to defend their own country, to defend free enterprise. This whole movement, when you think about it, that was a revolution when Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer in 2020 said for the first time in American history that the Democrat Party, a major political party in the United States, would endorse a socialist and would endorse socialism. And they have followed through with that. They changed that. That was the Rubicon moment. They passed the Rubicon right then and there, and they haven't gone back since.
So are we, you paint a very depressing scenario. I sometimes think that a lot of these Democrats aren't thinking past the end of the week, much less, thinking long-term about the complete destruction of our way of life. But needless to say, I think socialism, like you say, does lead to it. It's an anathema to everything that we supposedly stood for when we created this country. But do you think that people are picking up on this? Is the general populace figuring this out? You look at the so-called polls, and despite the fact that the Republicans should win a handful more seats in the Congress, I get the impression that it's still fairly even, overall, 50-50 when it comes to support for Republicans and Democrats.
Well, the Democrats are moving so aggressively to implement a socialist agenda, not only through the actions of the White House, not only by Congress, but also by the administrative state. They are pushing so hard to crush the fossil fuel industry. They're pushing so hard to promote this cultural Marxism in our schools and in the military. They're doing it so hard, so much effort is being expended, that they are generating anger, tremendous anger. The American electorate is mad. They're very upset. And that what they're hoping is that they can pull off a wholesale destruction of the market by the end of the Biden administration. And they're willing to sacrifice their majority in Congress to push this agenda. They won't go back on fossil fuels. They won't open the spigots and allow us to have energy independence again.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they don't understand is the American people, we're not all a bunch of dullards, as Hillary Clinton thought we were, as Joe Biden has variously characterized the American people, and as is commonly understood among Democrats. We are not that people. We know what's going on. We are a silent majority, by and large. But when they push it too far, when they keep this going, they're going to reach a breaking point. When 15% of the American population can't afford food because of inflation, mm-hmm. because of the cost of fuel, because of the runaway inflation that is we're experiencing and is going to get a lot worse over time, and when unemployment also kicks in, when you have that scenario, people will reject this. But the question is, will they go too far? How far will we go mm-hmm. before we, as a people, will reject it in a really powerful manner? But I do believe the American people are upset. I believe the American people are going to show that in the midterms. I think Congress is going to be a Republican victory in major terms. We will see slight progress in the Senate with Republican victories. There may be a Republican Senate out of this. But as Biden continues this movement, and they will push it all the way to the breaking point, when as Biden continues this movement for another 2 years, beyond that, the American people are going to be pushed to their wit's end.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just hoping that we don't lose faith in the electorate, the election process, as a means to resolve these issues, because I think they will push it to the point provoking people into a revolution.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a little bit about your book, because I think it draws on the fact that Democrats have had a history of moving towards the idea of a socialistic state. Your book, The Authoritarians, Their Assault on Individual Liberty, the Constitution, and Free Enterprise, from the 19th century to the present. So I guess in your book you talk about back in the 1800s, how Democrats even then were thinking about socialistic philosophies?
Yes, in the antebellum South, in the 1830s, the most people don't know this history, but it's an extraordinary history. The leading academics in the South, as well as the leading political figures in the South, in the Confederate South, as it was being formed before the Civil War, they began to push against one of their own, Thomas Jefferson. They began to realize that they could not answer the abolitionist cries that slavery was an abomination, that it was immoral, but not only that, that it violated the fundamental tenets of the Declaration of Independence expressed in the second paragraph, and that the Southerners were turning on one of the greatest Southerners, Thomas Jefferson. So what happened was the Southerners, in response to that, didn't try to argue anymore that Jefferson, that slavery was consistent with Jefferson's language, all men are created equal. They instead adopted a new philosophy, and that was Friedrich Hegel's collectivism from Germany. Friedrich Hegel is Karl Marx's teacher. And he laid the foundation for Marxism in the notions of collectivism, and that you are essentially worthless except to the extent that you serve the state, and that he justified the institution of slavery by arguing that that was cradle-to-grave socialism, that it was an ideal system because it took an inferior race, he was a racist, and it associated them with a superior race, and enabled them in the comfort of control to learn from the superior race. This justification of the morality of slavery became a centerpiece in defense of the institution of slavery. All right, after the Civil War, this philosophy didn't die with the 13th Amendment and the abolition of slavery. It actually caught on throughout academia, and droves of academics from all of the major universities from the 1860s through the 1880s went to Germany and studied in the Hegelian historic schools, they were called, and learned to despise individual liberty, Lockean concepts of government, classical liberalism, the founding generation, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. And this then insinuated itself into the creation of an unconstitutional government, which is the administrative state, first at the state level, then at the federal level, and then at the federal level in spades during the New Deal, and progressing on to the present, such that today, two-thirds of all laws, not the product of those we elect, is not under the Constitution, but is rather the product of the unelected heads of the over 250 different bureaucratic agencies who rule without constitutional constraints on their power. So this is the destruction of the republic. And it is out of this bureaucracy that most of the mischief is happening in the move for socialism. And what I show in my book is not only this history, but the rise of socialism within the administrative state. The socialists who are in the administrative state have been chafing at the bit to get to this point where the public would be tilted in the direction of socialism and they could make this movement over.
Are you kind of like in this day and age, like executive orders from the executive department of the president issuing things, for instance, like the student loan bailout and things like that, product of bureaucracies inside of his executive department?
That's right, and you'll notice that he resorts over and over again to executive orders to create legislative actions. He violates the Constitution, both in its limitation on power of the ability to make law to the legislative, but also in the overall separation of powers. He's making of himself a dictator. He forced the mask mandates. He did it unlawfully. The Constitution is only being defended by the courts, and that not perfectly. But when it comes to Biden, if he had his way, there would be no judicial restriction on his exercise of legislative power in addition to executive power, making that the very definition of tyranny, according to James Madison in the Federalist Papers, and according to Montesquieu before that in the Spirit of the Laws. But the point is, this is happening now. We are witnessing the destruction of our republic. It has been going on for a very long time, but they are accelerating it. And if we don't stop it, we will lose it. And if we lose it, we will lose our freedoms. And if we lose our freedoms, they will be very, very hard to get back.
Well, Jonathan Emord, I want to thank you so very much for coming on. I do indeed agree that we're in a very mortal storm right now. We have to sit up and look and understand what's going on. Again, I want to plug this book of yours, The Authoritarians, Their Assault on Individual Liberty, the Constitution, and Free Enterprise from the 19th Century to the Present. Thank you so very much, Jonathan.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Jonathan Emord, we are going to take our break, and when we come back, it was primary day yesterday. Both Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, former President Trump came up big-time winners. We're going to take a look.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, this is Steve Acara, psychologist and host of the Chapters Wrap Live. Each live show will bring on top-notch guests from the nonprofit world. We are the advocacy show that provides a platform for other advocates. So please tune in on your drive home from work to share your voice. The Chapters Wrap, where unity and diversity meet one chapter at a time.
Listen to Kicking Unhealthy Relationships to the Curb at 5, Voices for Change at 6, Reach Out with Ray and Steve at 7, and The Chapters Wrap at 8, Wednesdays, here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
What's the buzz in Tampa Bay? Senior Voice America Radio, a unique morning variety program delivering the latest commentary on politics by host and political analyst Tim Bryce and the up-to-minute happenings of Wall Street. Beyond politics and finance, they scale the scholar's rampart by including topics on religion and nutrition with thought-provoking guests and interviews. Tune in every weekday from 8 to 10 a.m. on this Tan Talk station. Senior Voice America, serving our nation's seasoned citizens for over four decades.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. Freedom Works, thank you so very much for being with us. So we had the primary here in Florida that was also in New York, and there was in a couple of other states yesterday. And here in Florida, we particularly here in Pinellas County, we were paying attention, were we not, Ed, to this race in the 13th District. Charlie Crist is abandoning his congressional seat to run for governor, which left it open both on the Republican and Democratic side. And Trump endorsed Anna Paulina Luna in that district run, and she won. She defeated Kevin Hazlett, who we've had on here a couple of times. We did interview Anna Paulina Luna last time, not this time, and Amanda Mackey. So she'll be up running in the Republican race. There were some other people. Trump-backed Florida Republican victors included incumbent Congressman Vern Buchanan, Greg Stube, Scott Franklin, Byron Donalds, Brian Mast, Mario Diaz-Balart, and Carlos Jimenez. In New York, Trump endorsed Nicole, I guess it's Maliotakis, who won. Also, Elise Stefanik, who won. And Representative Claudia Tenney, who won. So he's doing fairly well. In fact, he tweeted, he also endorsed some Democrats, but he did that kind of tongue-in-cheek, I guess. He said he celebrated all wins. This is him tweeting from his favorite, for his favorites in primary races on Tuesday. Let's see. He says, looks like a fantastic evening of all wins. Great candidates. He later added, 26-0 tonight, turning numerous tight races into big and easy wins. He says, overall, for the last 4 years, 98.4% on endorsements. So he's pretty proud of himself. He also endorsed some Democrats, tongue-in-cheek, Dan Goldman, who won his New York primary. He said, it was my great honor to strongly endorse him. I do this because that he headed up, not because he had, I do this not because he headed up the impeachment committee and lost, but because he was honorable, fair, and highly intelligent. He also, by the way, Trump backed Matt Gaetz, and he won. And the victory for Matt Gaetz came despite the fact he's been under the radar or been under the microscope a little bit over supposedly sex trafficking allegations, but that didn't seem to go anywhere, and it didn't seem to make much difference to the people that were...
Yeah, I thought he was going to be indicted and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, that was that other show. Never mind.
Yeah. So it was overall, it was a pretty good day for Trump. Now everybody's going to be able to concentrate. Oh, Charlie Crist, of course, won. Won against Nikki Fried in his race to be the Democratic nominee for governor.
Yeah, well,
he won big time there.
The Times this morning has got him plastered all over the front.
I'm sure they do. Yeah,
their poster child.
I think.
By the way, he last night I was watching Bay News or whatever it is called Spectrum 9 last night because they had the election results coming in.
Right.
And unfortunately, in the middle of it, I had to watch Charlie Crist in his little acceptance speech.
Oh, yes.
And I just laughed and I cried a few times. And He seems to forget there was a reason we voted him out. And then he said he was going to take on, DeSantis and his Nazi flag waving fans or followers.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. First of all, he's changed the stripes so many times. I don't even know what he is anymore. That's number one. He used to be, they used to call him Chain Gang Charlie.
Yeah, I know. But he's
completely reversed himself on the way he used to be.
The photo of a career politician. He's in it for the money. That's it. He doesn't care about you or I. You go up and ask him a question on the street, he doesn't have an answer, he turns away.
I actually thought Nikki Fried might give him a better run for his money. But you know what? He overwhelmed her.
She had a horrible campaign. Her campaign slogan was at the end said, I'll give you a governor you finally can be proud of. I don't know where she's been the last couple of years, but we've got that taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I don't think Charlie Crist is going to have a snowball's chance.
I don't think so either. He's going to throw a lot of junk against the wall and hope some of it sticks.
Yeah. I think so, too. So, what's going on most recently at Mar-a-Lago? Apparently, there's some discussion that Trump maybe have been a little less, friendly with some of the people that were talking with him than we had been led to believe, and that they had been asking for certain documents and he had been kind of hedging on it. Anyway, a Department of Justice taint or filter team has been reviewing the documents that were seized in Mar-a-Lago by the FBI, apparently. The review began soon after the search warrant was executed. Apparently, it's standard procedure, according to one of the officials, a senior law enforcement official, who said that it's standard procedure for the Justice Department to use a filter team to go through documents that were obtained during a search, in part to identify records that may be protected by attorney-client privilege. Now,
does that include Melania's underwear, too?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, Trump's lawyer, and this may stifle the attempt by Trump's lawyers to request the appointment of what's called a special master to review all of the documents and be a go-between before the FBI starts pawing through everything.
Mm.
You know, a special master who would be an independent person that would say, no, you can't look at this, and yes, this you can look at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the FBI apparently is going to look at anything they grabbed.
Sure. Well, they're looking for something.
They're looking for something.
Yeah.
So, we'll see where all of that goes.
So no charges or anything
like
that?
We're
going
to have the drip, drip, drip. Huh?
No charges against Trump? No, nothing?
Nothing yet.
Well, come on.
It's going to be a long time. And they want this to drip, drip, drip. And they're going to let little
things. How many times do we have to go through this? Do we have to?
I know.
He's going to be indicted for 29 women that have sexual harassment. Let's see. We're going to try to impeach him twice. He's crooked. He's stealing money. But of all that junk that you keep spewing, nothing. You can't come to a radio station to do a show and have proof of anything. An arrest, an indictment, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Every time it's hearsay. Well, let's go and go on the networks with the January 6th stuff.
Here's the thing: the FBI has lost credibility a long time ago. Look at the way they treated Hillary Clinton with all of those documents that she took and put on and through her email system she sets up. You know, just and going back and forth, and they never did a thing. Their credibility is down the toilet.
Her system was hacked.
And her system was hacked.
Nobody right. broke into Mar-a-Lago and
stole the
documents. Stuff.
Right. Right. Absolutely. And look at all the documents that Barack Obama took. He still has them. They never make a big deal out of these things with these others. The rules are for thee and not for me.
We were led to believe with all the flashing lights that night, there's going to be a raid. We were expecting something.
I expected them to come you know, what is it, down the side of the building? You know how you see those in the movies, those guys?
Okay.
Why, you know, dropping from helicopters is what I meant. Anyway, go ahead.
But nothing.
I know.
There's nothing. We said it after it happened. This better be a slam dunk. And this is nothing but a crap in one hand and wish in the other and see which one gets filled first.
Yeah. I think you're right, my friend. All right, let's take our final break. And when we come back, among other things, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in Russia. We're going to talk a little bit about what has happened in California since their no bail thing has gone on. And we're also going to talk about the top 10 states with the worst community colleges.
I hear the drums echoing tonight. She hears only whispers of some quiet conversation.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to Tan Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on Tan Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back for the final segment of Freedom Works on a Wednesday, and thank you for being with us. By the way, we are here doing our show live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Tantalk Radio Network. We always appreciate you finding time to listen to us. However, we know you're busy, and maybe 10 o'clock's not a good time to listen to us live. So thanks to Big Ed. All our shows are on podcast, meaning you can go to our website, ourfreedomworks.com, and click on the podcast button. And Ed's got all the shows that we've done. Most recent show at the top, all the way down. You'll see who the guest is and what our top 10 is, the whole bit. And you can listen over and over and over again, so you never forget what we talk about. Just go to ourfreedomworks.com, O-U-R, ourfreedomworks.com. Ed, you know what? It's hard to believe. You know that this war in Ukraine has now been going on for 6 months? We're now at the six-month anniversary of that war.
People didn't think it would last 6 weeks.
I know. They thought that Russia would just overrun the country.
What are we putting, another $30 billion into it? Again.
That's another thing. We're dumping more money into it. President Zelensky of Ukraine said in an emotional speech marking their 31 years of independence as a country that their country has been reborn. He calls it reborn when Russia invaded them, and that it would never give up its fight for freedom. In a recorded speech aired on the six-month anniversary of the February 24th invasion, Zelensky said Ukraine no longer saw the war ending when the fighting stopped, but when Kyiv finally emerged victorious. So they continue to fight. I got to give them credit, that little country, you know? It's just amazing. Yes, indeed, we are sending more money over. You know, Biden kind of got caught into having to do that. Now, you know, people on both sides of the aisles can give you one way or the other on it, you know. Some Democrats agree with it, some don't. Some Republicans agree that we should be helping, and some don't.
Well, I mean, you got to, I said this morning, is it, first off, what's happening over there is just disgusting, and the travesties, what happened to those people, but I mean, heartbreaking. Are the people of Ukraine fighting this fight, or is the U.S. dollar fighting the fight?
Well, the people of Ukraine are definitely fighting. I mean, it's not like in Afghanistan where the people didn't give a damn about protecting their country.
Who else is donating money in that amount?
Nobody's donating money in that amount, no. No, there's no question about it. You know, I have mixed feelings. I want to see Ukraine survive.
I do, too.
I want to see us give them the military, whatever, equipment that they need. I was for handing over those. Remember when we were talking about whether or not they should allow those, what was it, Polish MiGs or whatever?
Yeah.
Not Polish MiGs, but whatever those planes were, that we would release them so that the Ukrainians would have access to them. And we got sort of cold feet on that.
Think of what we could have given them if we hadn't left all that stuff in Afghanistan.
And then in Afghanistan, yeah, that's the other thing. What a
joke.
You
could start a whole new army.
As a matter of fact, it's amazing what, you know, the Taliban grabbed all that stuff up. I don't know if they even understand a lot of it.
I mean, are they using it or are they selling it?
Maybe a little bit of both, don't you think?
I mean, I'm sure
they're using it if they can.
I'm sure China and Russia would like to buy some of that sophisticated equipment that was left behind.
Yeah, I'm sure they would.
And take a look at it.
That's a good point. I want to also mention... You know what? California, where all kinds of stupid ideas start, and one of them was, of course, $0 bail, right?
Right.
You're going to let people out, $0. A California district attorney has found that more than 70% of the suspects released on $0 bail between 2020 and 2021 committed new crimes.
That is
70% of them get out with no bail and commit new crimes. Why are we not surprised?
And That whole idea was to help people get out of jail and start a new life but it actually gets them out of jail quicker so they can commit another crime.
That's exactly what's happening. He says when over 70% of the people released under the mandated zero bail policies go on to commit additional crimes, including violent offenses like robbery and murder, simply no rational public safety-related basis to continue such a practice post-pandemic. No kidding. I mean, I'd be very interested to see how things go in California in November with all the voting. Now, before we get to our top 10, Ed, I think we got to pay tribute to a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Yeah.
That passed away. Len Dawson. Mm. Kansas City Chiefs. Remember back in the year? Well, I do at least.
I didn't watch him play, but I watched him for years on the NFL show that he was part of.
Yes.
Him and Nick Bonacani.
And Nick Bonacani, right. Well, he was 87 years old. He was a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. Great quarterback for them.
Yeah.
And when the Kansas City Chiefs first played in the Super Bowl against the Green Bay Packers, Len Dawson was the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have to pay tribute to him, passing of an icon.
Yeah.
Anything's going on right now? Let me ask you, speaking about NFL football, is our beloved Tom Brady back in the fold now from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers?
He's back. We found out where he was. He fessed up and told everybody.
Did he go on a drinking binge?
No.
Did he get into a car wreck with drugs? What did he do?
It was in his contract, and it was a gentleman's agreement that when he decided to unretire, he said, listen, I had already made plans for these dates to go to the Bahamas for 11 days with the family.
Oh.
Now think how well that was conceived, because you know people talk. And you figure somebody would have let him. I mean, there were people searching for him, and they could not find him. So you got the staff that wherever he stayed in the Bahamas kept their mouths shut. And then any players that he told where he was going kept their mouths shut. But anyway, he's back, and
I understand he was in good form. They were watching him the other day.
He was nice and rested. And congrats to the Rays last night. 11-1.
Oh, who'd they beat?
The Angels.
They beat the Angels.
Yeah,
okay.
In the last 10 games, they have the best record in baseball right now.
Really?
Yes.
Well, maybe they found the magic elixir.
Yeah. And, you know, New York, the Yankees are having trouble getting out of their own way in some.
Now, are they still stumbling?
Yeah. Yeah, they beat the Mets, but still probably.
Well, maybe you know, we're peaking at the right time as we get towards September.
A lot of
here.
Guys getting healthy and coming back.
You know, We still got a ways to go. We got all of September.
40-some-odd games.
Yeah.
40-some-odd games.
Long way to go. Okay. Ed, we did the top 10 states with the best community colleges on Monday. And if you remember, number one state with the best community college system was Connecticut.
Right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
So now we're going to give you the top 10 states with the worst community colleges. This is, a survey or some sort of data processing done by Wallet Hub. They compared 600-plus community colleges, almost 700, in the American Association of Community Colleges. They used 19 metrics, but nine states did not qualify to be looked at because they didn't have at least two of the schools of the 700, almost 700, didn't have at least two schools in the 700. So those nine states were, in alphabetical order, Alaska, Delaware, Florida, Idaho, Indiana, Nevada, Rhode Island, Utah, and Vermont.
Hmm.
So this is a somewhat tainted list, but for the heck of it, we're going to do it anyway. Top 10 states with the worst community colleges. Number 10. Now, this one surprised me. Massachusetts. I would have thought they would be one of the best. Because Massachusetts has Harvard and all these other great schools, Boston College. All right. Number 9. Illinois. Now, that one also surprised me. They have some pretty good schools in Illinois. Apparently, their community colleges are not part of it. Number 8, Texas. I thought there would be a lot of community colleges in Texas. Apparently, they might have, but they don't do that well, according to this list. Okay, number 7, Louisiana. Louisiana, the big breezy, the big easy. Number 6, Georgia. Number 5, way out west in Montana, big sky country. Number 4, this is another one in the Northeast where I think they would have had good community colleges, but Pennsylvania is number 4. Number 3, Alabama.
South's not doing too good.
No, they're not.
No.
We got a bunch of southern states right now not doing too good. Let's see if we can find any more. Number 2, Mississippi. I guess we did, didn't we? poor old Mississippi. I hate to say this, but Mississippi tends to rank least and worst. Remember all these different things we do? Doesn't it seem like Mississippi is always at the bottom of the pack?
Yep.
I think we're picking on them a little bit too much. I really do. Okay, Ed, you're never going to believe it. I bet you won't even get close. Let's see how close you can get.
North Dakota. I don't know.
North Dakota actually is not a bad guess. I mean that. But it's not North Dakota. Ohio. Yeah. I have no idea why it's Ohio. None whatsoever, but that's what they say. So if you live in Ohio, don't go to community colleges if you really want to get educated.
They all go to that Buckeye place at Ohio State.
Yeah, Ohio Staters.
Yeah,
indeed. All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us. We thank you, as always. Remember this. Be careful, drive safely, and always think of freedom as freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by General Steel.
I'm Steve Kathan. We've heard it for years. A mountain of student debt has left